Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, a podcast focused on the local Twin Ports running scene. My name is Tony Stensland with Tony Stensland Coaching.
And I am Mike Ward with Duluth Timing and Events.
All right, quick thank you before we get started to our sponsor of this episode, Austin Jaro, Duluth's original running store. That's the place to get your running shoes. Great advice from all the people that work up there. Check out their website, austin-jaro.com. They are also on Facebook and Instagram. Drive on up to their location on Central Entrance, just on the other side of where the Home Depot is, but on the other side of the road. Or give them a call, 218-722-1185. Thanks so much to Austin Jaro. All right, and we are back with another episode of the Duluth Rundown Podcast. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to our podcast. We're starting to get some feedback and some emails, and it's really fun. Mike, how have you been? I haven't seen you since the last time we recorded the podcast, I
think. Yeah. I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little jealous that you're getting the emails, and are these on the Duluth Rundown at gmail.com?
No, I haven't checked that one actually for a while either, to be honest with you.
We should probably check that. We might have a lot more requests.
We may. Who knows? We apologize if you have emailed and we haven't gotten back to you. But I honestly haven't checked that in a while. No, I've gotten this one on my personal email.
We don't really publish that email very much.
Right. We probably should. In fact, we'll talk about this later in a different podcast, and Mike and I haven't even talked about this. He doesn't know, but I have some ideas that I want to kind of utilize with the emails and do some more interactive stuff with you guys, the listeners, as well. But that's maybe the next podcast we'll have that ready to roll. So yeah. Stay tuned for that.
I'm kind of jealous that you're getting all the feedback of like, hey, Tony, do this, do that. Like, so, all right, here's my plug. If any listeners out there have any comments or requests, you can email me, Mike, yeah. or Tony.
Yeah. Should we give out your phone number and you can text Mike as well,
just,
guys?
Knock on my door, my address. No, I'm just kidding. Half of our listeners probably know where I live anyways.
Yeah, and same with me.
Or if you don't, go to Strava.
Yeah. Track me down. That's the thing. I think, as far as I know, most of our listeners, we know them.
Probably.
You know, for the most part. I don't know of a ton that, I take that back. There's been a few that have liked our Facebook page that are like, oh, I don't know that person. And maybe you know them and I don't. That's sure. Very possible. But I have noticed that a few times on our Facebook page that this person liked our page. And I'm like, I don't know who that person is.
It's really cool getting feedback though. And I'm really excited to talk about this latest listener feedback item later in the episode.
So. Yeah, definitely. So how about, Mike, how's your running been?
It's been pretty good. I've been fairly consistent, just some light jogging. I haven't done any speed work for probably months now, and I haven't done any long runs for a while. But, I'm getting out almost every day for a nice kind of like just half-hour jog, and it's good.
I did see you run by the Rose Garden the other day with those two dogs in tow. I was sitting in my car waiting for my training group.
Yeah.
And you were going pretty slow.
That's my motivation most days is I got to get the dogs out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So that one dog did not want to go.
Yeah.
I could tell.
Well, sometimes with the two dogs, you got one different speeds. I was outstretched my arms.
Right.
And the dogs were probably 15 feet apart.
Yeah. Exactly. It was like, I kind of felt bad for you. I was like, oh, I can tell he's just not really enjoying this too much.
Like, you slow down, you speed up.
Yeah. Nice.
The joys of running with dogs, I guess.
Really. Yeah. So. Cool. Yeah. Should we roll into the podcast?
Yeah, let's get going with some race results. It's great to report on some race results.
Yeah, and, first time in a while.
We could have probably reported on several virtual events, but either way, we have some in-person race results. They were on back-to-back days, two events hosted by one event company here in Duluth called Grandma's Marathon.
Heard of them.
Yeah, heard of them. So the Minnesota Mile was pre-scheduled for just this past Friday, September 11th, and that was able to go off with social distancing measures in place, plenty of waves, even more so than usual, no more than 25 people in a wave, and kind of socially distanced from the get-go. The race was won by John Curley here in Duluth, 27 years old, in 4 minutes, 51 seconds. Teague Snyder, also from Duluth, 30 years old, came in second place, 452.7, exactly 1 second behind. And then third place was Cameron Stocky, 15 years old, from Mountain Iron. And Cameron's been on a lot of our recent race results. Super fast kid, 453.0, so less than 1 second from third place. And so those top three for guys, those were the only three times under 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Fourth place, 526. So definitely pretty competitive up front. For women, the race was won by Elizabeth Hansen out of Duluth, age 29, with a 6 minute 10 second. So definitely a good showing for Duluthians at the Minnesota Mile. Lizzie Harnell, 13 years old, mm-hmm. from Proctor, with a 6:13. I think she's a up-and-coming cross-country star, if I'm not mistaken. I heard that in chitter-chatter at the race, actually. Oh, okay. So. And then Robin Madol, I might be mispronouncing that, sorry. 36 years old, from Duluth, came in third place with a 6:20.9. So definitely a little bit closer clumped together for the ladies' results there. I guess in top 10 or so. So that was the Minnesota Mile. And then the very next morning, was the Fickers 5K, which was rescheduled from April. And this took place on Saturday. This is just the Saturday, September 12th. 318 finishers total in the in-person race, although they do have virtual options for both the mile and the 5K. Liam Fife from New Prague, age 20, won the race, 17:29. Sean Gaskell out of Esco, longtime Duluthian runner, was second place, 18:10. And then Philip McGrath, 38, from Lake Nebagaman, 19:24. So 17 and 18 and a 19 for a top three for guys. And then for ladies, Rochelle Wirth, she's been her name on the podcast, on the race results, plenty of times. Mm-hmm. 58 years old, from Duluth, wins the race in a 21:19. Tight race for the ladies. Christy Nixon, 33 years old, from Duluth, with a 21:21, 2 seconds off. And then Lisa Filzen, I believe she got fourth place in the mile, too. 31 years old, from Hermantown, with a 21:28 for third place for ladies. So definitely pretty tight. A lot of 21 minutes. I think top, seven gals were under 22. So definitely clumped up in those kind of top results. It's hard to know when, you know, I guess you have to look maybe on the results, but you could be in the first wave, finishing at 21:30, and be winning for hours, and right. then have your time beat. It's kind of strange that way, you know?
Yeah.
So great to see races go on. I think this is a template that's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
I guess kind of we'll see if there are any consequences, I'll say, perhaps, for having a race. But personally, being down there for both events the entire time, I would say it's about as safe as you'll see anything. I mean, if you think of non-sanctioned events, and I'm using air quotes, events such as in the summer, a ship coming through the Lake Superior Canal, much more people, much closer together. I mean, if you look in a restaurant, you know, we can go into restaurants and bars these days. I mean, I would feel way more comfortable doing a race like this than there. I mean, the people that I saw within 6 feet or 20 feet appeared to be in the same household, I would say. So, you know, even from a staff perspective, like me as the race timer, I was totally separate from the announcer.
Mm-hmm.
At the start line, they were totally separate from the check-in area. I mean, it's just not your typical race environment where you have screaming fans at the sideline. Not like there's a lot of races that have screaming fans at the sidelines, but especially from a staffing back-end perspective, you know, generally you have the medical staff, the finish line, say announcer, finish line kind of race production people, the race timer, all in a close proximity at the finish line. That just was not the case for either of these races. So, and I think that's perhaps as important as keeping the athletes safe as keeping the staff, medical people, the race producers. I mean, everyone's on an equal playing field, I think, in that regard as well. So I think that's one thing that I noticed anyways, is kind of from the back end perspective of, you know, that was a consideration as well. So
yeah, that's really good to know. I know Grandma's has done a really great job with kind of coming up with a blueprint for how this potentially could work for races, and, you know, has worked. And for those of you who listen to both parts of our podcast, typically the interview section and the rundown section, stay tuned for the interview section, because we'll talk a little bit about the COVID situation, especially with regards to runners and then races and things with, we're going to discuss that with a medical doctor, Dr. David Worley, who's also a runner. And so stay tuned for that. That'll be really interesting as well.
Yeah, so, and we also have some upcoming races.
We do, actually, yeah.
So just in two more weekends, this is Saturday, September 27th, Sunday, September 27th, we have the Pike Lake 10K and Half Marathon. This is a Duluth Running Co. Event. It's an in-person 10K and half marathon. I believe that they're utilizing almost the exact same format as Grandma's, and that is this: limit to 250 people per race block, and within each race block are 25 person waves, socially distanced. So it's essentially a time trial start. And so a little bit unique, you know, these last two races this past weekend, a 1 mile and a 5K, and now we have a 10K and a half marathon. And so yeah, I think that just makes the socially distancing even easier. And all these events have a virtual component as well. So I think that's a way that the race can stay alive, is by offering options. And everyone has a varying comfort level. So excited to see that one go off in just a few weeks as well. Also, this isn't necessarily upcoming in the cycle of the Duluth Rundown, but I think it's definitely notable. The Wild Duluth trail races here in Duluth have been approved, permits secured, and so the races are definitely set. This is a ways out, October 17th and 18th. Slightly modified from past years in that the 100K is canceled, the 10K is canceled, and I think that's to fit the 250 person race block kind of guidelines. So 50K is on the 17th, the half is on the 18th, and
you can do both.
Yep. Time trial start, I believe, and it's just kind of easier to say distance on the trail as it is. So
I think really nice to have that race, or have, you know, a race for the trail runners. They, you know, a lot of, you know, with the local trail runners, specifically the spring series of the NMTC didn't work out, the fall series didn't work out, Superior 100 that whole weekend is gone, you know, there's just so many things, Voyager, so it's almost like the last one that we could possibly have, and we can have it. That's a good thing for the most part, you know, maybe not the 100K, but at least you get the 50K or the half marathon.
Right.
So, yeah.
So those are coming up, and that's good. We'll be keeping an eye on those two for sure. Moving on to trails report. I don't know, Tony, you've been on the trails lately?
Yeah, you know, I've been in Bagley still a lot, and of course Bagley is almost always good. That's just how it is. But I have been even in Hartley every now and then as well, just kind of cruising through there, and yeah, Hartley's been great.
Yeah, I mean, it's still been relatively dry. I think what's really fun about this season and getting into the next season, the fall season, is the fall colors, and especially running up the shore, you know, along the Superior Hiking Trail. Excellent trail running just for the fact of you can catch some sweet vistas for changing colors. Although, of course, you know, then there's leaves on the ground, and that's asking for an ankle twister, but trails conditions have been great.
Yeah, it has been. Been really good.
Moving on to gear review, and this, Tony, maybe you can kind of provide some backstory on the request.
Yeah, so I'll do that, and then I'm going to pass it over to Mike, because he's going to have better information on this than I will. So I got a request from one of our listeners to talk a little bit about running with trekking poles and how to do so, how to practice it, when you might need them, and also then, you know, talking about buying some trekking poles, what to look for, what works well. And so, Mike, I'm passing that over to you because you have more experience with that than I do.
Yeah, I've run with trekking poles a lot, mm-hmm. a lot.
Yep.
I kind of have a cutoff, though. Like, if I'm running, you know, on trails faster than, say, 12, 13 minutes per mile, I ditch them.
Okay.
I think the benefit of trekking poles, and I implore people to do this just for fun, if you don't believe me, is, okay, you stand on the scale, look at your weight, and then you grab a pair of trekking poles, and you place them lightly on the ground, and you see what your weight is. And then dig down, lean on them, and see what your weight is then, you know. And the science behind it, if you can even call it science, is that it really takes a lot of the weight off of your legs. Of course, the weight has to be transferred somewhere. So the argument perhaps is I don't want my arms to go to crap, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, in a 100-mile race, you don't need your arms, yeah. You know. Mile 70, you know, you can use any possible muscle group that's not totally destroyed. So mm-hmm. for a longer race, 50 mile, 100K, 100 mile, you know, when you are going slower, I think it's a super useful tool. Just in general, you know, it takes the weight off of your legs. So running with trekking poles is weird. And I actually owned trekking poles for about 5 years mm-hmm. before I even gave them a fair shake.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a while, I think, to get over the frustrations of trekking poles. The frustrations being they're clunky, they get in the way, you kick them, mm-hmm. you drop them, they hit a tree, they twist your arm because they get stuck in a branch. I mean, it's endless.
The mud,
you know,
like right in that slot in the bridge when you're crossing the bridge and you put it down. And,
yeah, yeah. Right. You're right. I mean, you have some in your hand, so if you, I mean, try and unwrap a goo gel, you know, take a gel when you have trekking poles. It's really frustrating and complicated. So you have to weigh those frustrations and you have to get over them. And I've kind of joked with people on this, like, okay, you know, trekking poles are maybe frustrating, but if you run 50 miles with trekking poles and then set them aside and try and run 5 more miles, you'll be begging for them back, you know, because once you use them and you kind of get used to them, especially for a long effort, then you have them taken away. It's like, oh, my legs hurt so bad, you know. So that's a way to look at it, I guess. I think to start out with trekking poles, I mean, I would just go to any local retailer and find a pair that makes sense for you. There are so many options. There are a fixed length option. Mm-hmm. There are adjustable options, definitely much more common. There is aluminum. There is carbon fiber. There are composite type handles, foam handles, or cork handles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are different styles of hand. A webbing or I don't know what you call it, like a webbing thing for your hand to keep the poles on.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 options. So, I mean, to try a few out, to take a look, not to mention price point. I mean, you can buy a pair for maybe $50. You can buy a pair for $250 probably.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
So
the weight of the poles.
The weight
sometimes
of the
pole very is a little bit of an issue. Yeah,
I mean, you can pay an extra $100 to shave off a few ounces on your poles, you know, and that mm-hmm. reduces the fatigue on your shoulders and arms over time. I kind of like to get into a rhythm with them, where, you know, a running rhythm, but like utilize your normal running gait,
mm-hmm.
and that's how you use them, right? So when your arm normally swings up and your fist is kind of by your face, that's when you can kind of, you know, the top of the pole, and then when your arm swings back down, that's when you can plant the pole. And again, the idea is to take the weight off of your legs. Mm-hmm. So when you plant the pole, you can almost use that as like a pole vaulter would, mm-hmm. where it vaults them forward, right?
Propel you forward a little.
Propel you forward.
Yeah.
And so a pole vaulter, I guess, propels you straight up. That's the goal, right? This is to propel you forward because you want to go faster, more distance, right, for, mm-hmm. say, a 100-mile race or something. So when you plant the pole, you can utilize your muscles in your arm, your triceps, and your pecs and your back instead of your legs to propel you forward. And so I guess it is kind of the two sides of it. It takes the weight off, you know, and then also you can propel forward. So that's something to focus on, is to propel yourself forward, and also to lean on it like a walking stick or something. You know, why do you have a walking stick? You injure your foot, you lean on it, right, to take your weight up. So mm-hmm. kind of same deal. If you think of it as like that, like, what is this really doing for me? Mm-hmm. You know, propel you forward, take the weight off. And that helps, I think, get into a rhythm. Personally, if I'm running, I like to carry them, and I carry them like at the fulcrum. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, you know, a balance, like, you know, balance beam people that have the big long stick to help them balance. I feel like trekking poles help you balance on the trail, kind of, if you just hold them in your hands. So I find it easier to run without the poles, and I utilize the poles for strictly kind of power hiking or walking. So for instance, for the 100-mile race, if it's a runnable section, maybe slight downhill, buffed out trail, you know, I have my poles in my hands. I'm not using them at all.
Yeah.
Or they're under my armpit, or they're in my pack or something like that.
Did you use fixed or adjustable?
Adjustable.
Adjustable, okay.
But I looked at the fixed.
Yeah.
I want a pair of the fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Have them in my hand and you just run. And then you get to a small hill, or you just get really tired, start walking, or like slow jogging, mm-hmm. that's when I'll utilize the poles and actually stick them into the ground. And they work really well for hiking.
Yeah.
And so if you're hiking a lot, which, you know, I think most people in even a 50K are probably hiking a fair amount, mm-hmm. 50 mile and up, or, you know, say a 6-hour run, 10-hour run, you know, you're probably hiking a lot. But you're also doing some running. Hiking, I think, is more suitable for using the poles. You can kind of get into that rhythm. And it's all about finding the rhythm, I think, with that. So
when you're practicing with them, would you recommend like practicing on a flatter ground, or like an open, maybe not so much single track, but kind of open areas, just to kind of get that rhythm established and get the feel of carrying them?
I would say to get a feel, my recommendation would be just try and get over the fact that they're clunky and frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can just stick with it,
just accept that it's going to be a little different at first.
Yeah. And personally, I wouldn't even recommend just doing a trial run with them. Like, if you want to get poles, it's a good thing to have. Like, just wait until you go on a really long effort, you know, because that's where they really shine, you know. Like, an hour, you're not, say, getting tired enough. 4 hour, you know, that's where they're really going to start shining, when you have that fatigue and you rely on the poles to keep you going, you know. So I think that's more where, you know, if you're looking to get trekking poles, you know, and even if you're just walking, just you're a hiker, you know, and not even a runner, right, I would just wait for the harder effort.
Okay, that makes sense.
That being said, you can just take them out anywhere, mm-hmm. you know, anywhere. Mine came with rubber tips, so you can use them on, say, like a walking path, or the lake walk, or concrete or something. But, take them out, get used to them. But I think they really shine in that longer effort, for sure.
What kind do you have?
I have a Big Agnes brand, okay. Helinox, they're called.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I actually won them in a sweepstakes.
Oh, nice!
Probably 10 years.
Oh, yeah, I remember when you won that.
Yeah,
that Big Agnes sweepstakes.
It was cool. I won the sweepstakes, a fast packing sweepstakes.
I remember that.
The only thing I've ever won in my life.
Yeah, sleeping bag in a tent or something.
Bag, tent, yeah, the whole deal.
Yeah,
and the trekking poles.
Yeah,
and I used the tent a bunch. I used the sleeping bag a bunch, and these trekking poles collected dust until I started trying to hike long distances and train for through hiking.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, I should maybe give these a fair shake. And I hated them at first. And they collected more dust after I took them out one time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And then I really started doing some longer stuff. And it just feels natural at the end of like a really long day, especially just hiking. You get in the rhythm, you just have something to lean on, versus like you just want to like slump over and put your hands on your knees, you know, so they kind of keep you upright. And that's how I got into them, and I used them for Superior 100 mile, and I think they saved my butt, literally.
So the one caveat I would say with some of them, and specifically the carbon ones that are the lightest you're going to find, you're going to pay a lot. And I don't know this firsthand because I don't have a pair of the carbon ones. I do have some trekking poles. I don't use them a ton. But I have heard other stories, other people have, that they've cracked, the carbon is cracked on them.
Yeah.
Specifically the Black Diamond Z poles, which are really nice fixed poles, but they break down into thirds. And so when you're not needing the trekking poles, you can carry them really simply, which is a really nice concept. And then just unfurl them and they're there and you can use them again.
Mm-hmm.
Great trekking poles, but, and maybe they're better now, but I know at least one, if not two, I think maybe two people who had the carbon crack on them.
Right.
So my wife got a pair of the aluminum version, which are, you know, just a teeny bit heavier, but they work great for her.
Yeah. So. I've just heard, like, inherently in carbon fiber is more prone to cracking mm-hmm. than aluminum. I have the aluminum, mm-hmm. and I've beaten them on rocks, not intentionally.
Yeah.
But, you know, they get banged around a lot, and I think it's so random. It's just like anything. Like, you have a cell phone, and you've had right. it, you don't crack the screen for 5 years, and then you get a new one, and 5 days later it's cracked or something. Yeah. I think same deal. Like, it's going to be a freak accident where you're tired, and it gets wedged between a rock.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows?
Yeah,
so.
Very true.
But I have heard that, and I think the online reviews could probably speak a little more knowledgeably about the longevity aspect. But I'm sure there's people out there with carbon trekking poles for 20 years and never cracked. Just as well. So,
yep, yeah. that's very true.
If they were really prone to cracking, they wouldn't be in existence anymore. You know, they would go out of production.
You know, the trekking pole as a whole is like running with the trekking poles is a little bigger thing in Europe, and it's really only kind of taken off running with them here in the U.S. in the last maybe 5 or so years.
Right.
Obviously in the hiking world it's always been around, but in mm-hmm. the running world we're starting to see it more, and like right. like you said, I think people attest to the benefits of them. So
yeah, I think a part of this is almost the culture behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like cheating or something, or like you don't need them, like
oh, yeah,
you're
yeah.
just extra kind of, you know,
you gotta
hardcore
be a tough guy.
Right. And I'm thinking of just like the US runners, you know, like someone like Courtney DeWalter, where like you don't really see her using the trekking poles all that often, you know, and at like Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, everyone's got them.
Yeah.
Granted, that's a different race. It's a mountain race, you know. If you're going uphill or downhill, they just make that much of a difference. But I think there's a little element of that.
I can say for me personally, in my very limited experience with truly running with them, I've used them for hiking purposes mm-hmm. in Arrowhead, which is really more hiking than running. I wish I had had them for my 100-mile race, especially the downhills.
Yeah, right.
Like at Superior, and those big, long steps when your legs are so tired, they don't stretch down very easily, and you can...
Right.
I really wish I had used them and had right. them for those days.
Right.
Sure.
And just as much going uphill, you know, you got no energy.
Absolutely.
You just want to stop. I mean, you can just use them and dig them into the uphill,
mm-hmm.
you know, like where you're looking at practically, you know, the because the hill's so steep, you know, you're looking at like 5 feet in front of you, and there's
right.
the next step, right?
Right.
You can kind of use them as a...
Yeah, you can kind of feel them like fulcrum you up. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. So they're a nice tool to have for sure. I mean, kind of an expensive investment, but if you're doing longer stuff, and especially if you're hiking, it's worth every penny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you, Analu, for that question, and hopefully we answered that. And yeah, thanks, Mike.
Should we get on to what I'm into?
Yeah.
You know, I actually thought of what I'm into. At first, I didn't, because I know you have one.
Yeah.
But oh my gosh, how could I miss this?
Do I know what it is?
It's FKT season
yes.
on the Superior Hiking Trail. Oh my gosh. This is like the Super Bowl for me.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
It is that season, isn't it, though?
So we've talked about Brandon Johnson a bunch on the podcast. Mm-hmm. He's put up some incredible accomplishments. And this was really fun to track along. And I'm bummed that he did not make the FKT. But oh my gosh, he was on track to smash it. And it's... I want to hear the full story. This was just on Strava social media, but pretty much he was making, he did like a 50 mile and then a 30 and then another 50, I think.
Where was he at? Is this SHT?
SHT.
And what was his, unsupported?
Unsupported.
Unsupported?
Yeah.
Okay.
And which is kind of an interesting thing to consider as well, because Brandon is, you know, I think known as a ultra runner,
uh-huh.
and I didn't know that he was into the ultralight backpacking really. And so I think that's an excellent blend of the ultralight backpacking and ultra kind of worlds collide with the unsupported style.
Yeah.
And so it was really interesting to see him post on the fastestknowntime.com kind of leaderboard thing. And so he was going for it. And so this was last week, and it was really fun. I was like, he just needs to keep it up. And just, I mean, if you know what Brandon's done, you know that he can he can gut it out. I mean, he's won the last runner standing. I mean, he's had a couple sub 27 performances at Superior 100 mile. Like, he can stay up late, you know, he can push into the sleep deprivation, and he can really gut it out, I think, when times are getting tough, you know, which a lot of backpackers maybe can't do, right? But maybe, and I guess I can't speak to his backpacking experience, but maybe this is where the being too one-sided, if you will, putting too many eggs in the ultra runner basket, you know, it wasn't the best strategy, because I read on Strava that he was too cold the previous nights, and like last week got down, I would say unseasonably cold, maybe not unseasonably, but cold. And he wasn't, he didn't sleep well. And he said in the post that he was stumbling around the trail like a drunkard. I thought that was kind of funny. And he just didn't want to shiver all night again. And so I think he pulled the plug at, gosh, I want to say it was Beaver Bay going southbound. So maybe about 160 miles in. I mean, 140, that's still a long ways
to go.
Still
a ways to go,
So it was really fun watching Brandon's attempt. There was also another attempt by a gal who I could not find on the internet, and I've never heard of her. I don't even know if I'll be able to find her again. Catherine Baird. And so this was a unsupported female attempt, which has never been attempted. And I think it looks like she's still going, actually. So that's really cool. Yeah, so she just has to get to Wisconsin, and she's got the record, which is kind of cool. And it looks like she's through Duluth. Well, getting really close. She might finish tonight. I don't know how far she is, but that's a fun one to track.
Wow, cool.
And then there are two other ones going on simultaneously. One is Henry Slocum, and he's going southbound. And Brian Korgard, who is another last runner standing top finisher, he's going southbound as well. So a lot to follow on SHT, Fastest Known Times.
That's sweet. Definitely this season, for sure.
Right.
You know, you mentioned with Brandon and the cold, that's something that hadn't dawned on me that would occur on an FKT, but definitely I've seen it occur a lot at the Superior 100, so it only makes sense that it would occur on the FKT as well.
Right.
Because, yeah, it can get cold at night, and you're cold for a long time, and you're in running gear because you don't want to be too hot and forget to put on warmer stuff, or you just can't get the warmer stuff on or whatever. And yeah that would be really, really difficult.
Tough, because he's doing so well. I mean, who knows what his physical status was besides that, but you know, it's a tricky equation with the unsupported style, because you want to go as light as possible,
right?
But you don't want to skimp
exactly
on anything when it comes to warmth or food.
I was thinking back to some of my 24-hour races from way back in the day, and they were in October. The two that I did, they were both in October. But in those settings, it's like a two-mile loop that you just do over and over and over.
Right.
Your car is right there, so you have everything you need. In fact, you can get in your car and warm up if you need to.
Right.
But I remember, like, you'd put on almost your winter coat and your stocking hat and your gloves, and then you're just hiking for a couple of hours when you're cold or whatever. But then you sun comes up and you're back into shorts and a t-shirt kind of a deal.
Right.
Yeah. That would be really hard, though, if you're going unsupported on an FKT.
September's a pretty good time to go, you know, but also it can get cold.
It can get cold. Yeah. That's tough. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
What are you into lately, Tom?
What am I into? A couple of good books, actually. I just finished one, called Chasing Excellence. It's a biography on the great Adam State, coach Joe Vigil. Author is Pat Melgaris, who was a runner for Coach Vigil at Adams State. Really good book. If anybody knows anything about Coach Vigil, he also coached, helped coach Meb and coach Dina Castor to Olympic medals in the marathon in 2004. Really kind of spearheaded the U.S. team in those days. Coach Vigil is a widely respected and highly successful running coach, and just an all-around great guy from all reports, and the book was really interesting. Really enjoyed that. And now I'm reading this really good book, an older one. I don't think it's still in print, but it kind of has a local bent to it. The book is called The Silence of Great Distance by Frank Murphy, and the main character in the book is actually a Minnesota girl from Chaska. Stephanie Herbst is her name, and she ended up running at University of Wisconsin in the 80s under Coach Teagan. And the book talks a lot about, you know, those days with some of the girls that Wisconsin had that were really, really good under Coach Teagan. And it's a really wonderfully written book, and I'm really enjoying that one and just learning about some things that I didn't know about previously. Yeah. So those are the couple of things that I'm into lately, a couple of cool books.
Nice. And I know you have a shout-out as well.
Yeah, I've got three shout-outs. Three, yeah. Count them. I'm going to start with an anonymous shout-out. Well, and it's only anonymous because I don't know who this person is. But
that'd be anonymous.
I'm not the anonymous.
Truly anonymous.
Yeah. So speaking of Hartley, I was running through Guardrail about a week ago. And, you know, the foliage is still pretty thick, and you can't quite see around some of the turns. And sometimes when you're out there on some of that single track, a mountain biker can kind of come up pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm running along, and I just hear this bell jingling. Ding, 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 ding. It wasn't like the bell where you have on your handlebar and you ring it with your thumb. It was just a constant thing.
Jingle bell.
Yeah, exactly.
True jingle bell, yeah.
And then a few seconds later, a biker comes up.
Yeah.
He had it either on his bike or on his person or something.
Huh.
So big shout out to that guy, whoever that was, because he was riding pretty fast. He had a really nice bike. He was moving pretty good.
Yeah.
You could tell that he was like a really good mountain biker, and he was just having a really good time. But if not for that bell, he would have been on me in a split second around a curve. But I heard him before I ever saw him. And what a cool idea.
Yeah.
I'd never seen or heard that before, where people put a bell like on their bike.
Huh. Well, I've seen the little ding ding bell that you do with your thumb, but
yeah. But this one was just like, so it was a constant, and it wasn't annoying by any means. It was just, it was relatively quiet, but it wasn't, I would estimate, it was loud enough to where I heard him, I don't know, 100 meters before I saw him, something like that, you know, as we're going in opposite directions towards each other. So that was really cool. So anonymous shout out to that guy.
Nice.
So another shout out. I know these people as runners, but a shout out to Kyle Severson and Sarah McGowan, who got engaged.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. So big shout out to those guys. They are two really awesome people. Super happy for them.
Cool.
And then my last shout out is to all the people who ran their virtual Boston. There was quite a few of them this past weekend. I had one of mine that I'm coaching who finished today. So shout out to Jim for doing that. I know Barry, who was a podcast interview of ours just a couple of podcasts ago, he did his along with Tim Gerns, and then I also ran into a group of ladies in Bagley the other day helping out their friend Kirsten Anderson, who was doing her, I think that might have been Friday, she was doing her Boston as well. So big shout out to all the Boston runners out there.
Nice.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Yep.
Well, what else do we got for episode 26?
Yeah, I think that might be about it. I think we maybe covered everything. Should we get on to the interview?
Yeah, let's hear from David.
Yeah.